Welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I'm Tyson Ferris.
I'm Jeremy Sternhagen.
And this is Piranha.
Piranha, 1978 Joe Dante classic.
Yeah. This is about as old as I am.
Yeah. We keep watching movies. We just watched Jaws 2, which came out right around your birthday.
Yep.
And this one also came out.
This came out late summer, so I'd already been born when this came out.
This is why we do Jaws podcasts. We were born in the, we are Jaws ripoffs.
Yeah, we are the Jaws ripoffs. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
It's only fitting we were born right in the middle of all this stuff.
Yeah. So Piranha, right out of the gates, I quite enjoyed this. I'd never seen this film.
Yay.
Yeah.
Never
seen it before.
Were you aware of it?
I was aware of it. Mm-hmm. I was aware of its existence. I was aware of its poster. Mm-hmm. It's got a great poster. Even its poster is a ripoff.
I know of two posters. There's one with a giant piranha, a single giant piranha coming at a girl who's frolicking at the surface. And then there's another poster.
Straddling a floaty.
Yes. And then there's another poster, which is a woman like scrambling for the surface while a whole school of piranha also appearingly disproportionately huge are coming after her.
Yes.
Which one did you know?
The one I knew was the former, the woman straddling with the single piranha coming after her.
Gotcha.
Which is very Jaws poster.
A giant fish coming up after a woman underwater.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't that every Jaws ripoff poster?
It's even the Jaws poster.
There's multiple. We never talked about posters for Orca, but there is no Orca poster like that. Because Orca definitely presents the fish as the hero, I think. It's always like...
Well, even the film does, right?
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem of the film.
Or the reason it's awesome. I don't know. So for my piranha relationship is... So where I grew up in a very rural area of Montana, the local grocery store had a little corner in it where there was maybe at any given time 100 VHS tapes. And it was a very, I just can only assume the grocery store didn't choose the movies because it was like two kinds of movies, brand new releases and then old B-movie garbage. But amongst all that B-movie garbage, one of them was Piranha, which I knew nothing about other than like the cover. I knew the latter cover because the VHS tape had that cover with big school of Piranha. And we'll get to it. But another movie at that very same grocery store was Alligator.
Oh, cool.
So anyway, this grocery store introduced me to Piranha.
Which I've heard rumor we're going to get into that as well.
I would sure like to.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that you liked Piranha. This is interesting that we're going through all these sequels and ripoffs, and I've seen them all and you haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I'm not sure how that happens since we're both super movie nerds, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I liked Jaws so much. I'm like, I don't need to see any of these because I know they're not going to be better. And so far they have not been. But
come on now.
But I like, I really enjoyed Piranha. I even went back and watched it a second time with the commentary.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it then.
Did you, the Joe Dante and John Davison commentary? Okay.
And then I watched a third time in kind of double speed. So I watched the movie itself in about 45 minutes.
Okay.
On double speed. And that's when I took my notes.
Some people think that's sacrilegious, but I'm not going to lie. I sometimes watch movies like that, but only movies I've seen more than once.
Yeah. This was purely for notes. So the third time, I don't know if it counts, but, so I've seen it at least 2.5 times, but,
this kind of goes back to my discussion about Jaws 2, where when I first saw Jaws 2, I had no, like, I didn't view it as lesser than Jaws. I'm just like, I was too young to know the difference. Like, it's just a movie. And I had the same experience the first time I saw Piranha. I was probably 13, 14.
Sure.
And I was just like, I'm just taking it for what it is. And I remember watching it. And at that point, I had already seen Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting about halfway through the movie and kind of like looking at the cover. And this was right around the time where like the names who made movies registered with me. And I was like, oh, Joe Dante. I know that name.
I know that guy.
He made two movies that I love, Gremlins and Innerspace.
Sure.
Which are, I love Innerspace. I could do a Movies by Minute on Innerspace, but oh, just saying.
Don't say things you won't do.
No, I'm just saying. If there's someone else out there in the world who loves that movie as much as I do, I would do it.
I adore Innerspace.
I think it's like it's so underrated.
It's way underrated. It's first. It was the first letterboxed movie I ever saw.
Yeah.
And it came that way on the VHS.
Yeah.
And they had to put a disclaimer in front of it. I think we've even talked about
it. I think we talked about it before. Yeah. It was the movie that made me.
I'm having a deja vu moment.
Yes, so, yes.
Yeah.
It was the movie that made me realize, like, wait a minute.
Wait, are they not showing me all the movie?
Does this happen on every movie?
Yeah.
And yeah, thank you, Joe Dante. Because I think that was kind of his thing because Innerspace is an Academy Award winner for Best Special Effects.
It has fantastic special effects.
Yeah, industrial.
That really hold up, actually. Yeah.
Maybe I'll save this for later. Many of the special effects people involved in Innerspace worked on this movie here, Piranha.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you paid attention to the credits of this movie.
The credits of this movie are bonkers.
Bonkers, right?
Bonkers.
Right. And not even just like in their careers. Like people came up, like people who worked on Star Wars.
Worked on this movie. I know. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with the opening scene or should we jump in? Like the opening credits is where we get a lot of these names.
Yeah. Well,
cast mainly, not a lot of the behind the scenes.
Well, we're 8 minutes in here, so we should at least start talking about the film, I think.
Oh, well, yeah. It's good prime.
Big preamble, but
That's our job.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're not talking, you know, then what's the point? So I'd like to just start off. One of the things I really liked about this film is there is an economy of storytelling in this film.
Oh, yeah.
That is literally almost in every scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some scenes towards the end where they really stretch things out and let things breathe. And but everything is in service to kind of those scenes. And so those can breathe and have time and stuff. Spoilers, it's when piranha are eating people.
trait that Joe Dante, I think, exhibits in every movie he's made.
Yeah. So that's going to kind of be my theme in talking. I'm going to keep pointing out economy in the storytelling at any point I can. Yeah, and then we have the opening sequence here. It's very, very Jaws.
Where you don't see what's...
Well, it's moonlight, it's a couple, there's water, there's something in the water.
They're going for a moon night, probably pre-coital swim.
Yeah, you get... get a bit more boobies and bush than you do in Jaws.
I have a feeling, I think about this when I watch this, I have a feeling that when they shot it, they're like, oh, no one's going to see this movie. It's so dark. You can't see this in the theater. And then I think I said this when we were talking about Jaws, no one envisioned that this movie 40 years later would be in pristine high, you know, sourced from a 4K scan of the original 35mm film elements where it would just be blown up in like super bright Technicolor glory. So, yeah.
But I don't think that changes exposure. Like that doesn't change like, I mean, Jaws is literally dark on purpose. Like they darkened it.
And this movie's not. There's a lot of night scenes, but even the night scenes are very like
very well lit,
low budget. Have you read? Oh man, I can't even remember what it's called. There's a book.
They're very American Werewolf in London night.
Oh yeah.
Where you can really see people at night.
There's like, just a floodlight on them. Yeah. There's a book that I have, and I would borrow it to you. Have you read it? I can't remember what it's called. It's a Roger Corman book. It's just full of like quotes.
Yeah.
Joe Dante, Ron Howard, all of his school of flunkies. Maybe I should, quick diversion.
His school of flunkies are not flunkies.
Right. that was tongue in cheek. For any of you that don't know, so this is a Roger Corman produced movie, and everyone knows that Roger Corman is kind of synonymous with like B grade schlock, mm-hmm. but also well known to super film nerds is that many, 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 many famous people came out of the Roger Corman School of Filmmaking, among them Joe Dante,
Scorsese,
Jack Nicholson, James Cameron,
mm-hmm.
who directed Piranha 2,
by the way. The Spawning.
Yes.
Yep.
And all the
which, by the way, is very much set up here. I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, I'm just going to save you the trouble. I don't think you need to.
Oh.
James Cameron directed, I think, like a week of work, and then it got finished by an Italian crew. He had very little to do with it.
Oh, so okay.
He gets name on screen, but I don't think he had much to do with it. Anyway, there's a book I'm going to let you borrow. I can't remember what it's called. It has a title like Cannibal Girls and Roller Skate something something. I should just go grab it. It's right over there. But there's a lot of great stuff in there by Joe Dante. But there's this look to this movie, and I've seen a lot of Roger Corman movies because we've talked about this before. I love B grade, especially, you know, 70s stuff. This movie looks like every Roger Corman movie of that time. And I just am guessing is because he had the same exact fleet of cameras for every movie he made. So the camera that shot this movie, there's a 99% chance that the camera that shot this movie shot humanoids from the deep you know, all these other unbelievable, every movie that Roger Corman made was like a ripoff of something. So there's your Alien ripoff, there's your Aliens ripoff, there's more Jaws ripoffs. Anyway, all that to say, this movie just has a look.
Yeah.
And it looks like a Roger Corman movie.
And I actually like the look of this movie. It's great. I think it looks fantastic.
It's the cinematographer didn't go on to do much after this, but it's a good looking movie.
Yeah.
Or if he did, I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
So
military testing site, not on the map.
Mm-hmm. FYI, I would not jump in this pool if I found it. There's like
weird things in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If I came across this, I'm like, yeah, this water's full of chemicals.
Yeah, so in the economy of storytelling, we get military testing site. It's not on the map. We realize how they attack. Someone is still there and did nothing about it.
I love that setup. I love.
So there's a lot that is being told in this very short scene that'll literally help us with the rest of the movie.
Yeah. There's barely a wasted frame of film in this movie.
A fun little factoid from the commentary is when they cut to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
That was a moon that they bought from Disney stock footage.
Mm-hmm.
So that came from some Disney film somewhere.
And they had a moon prop for certain wide shots.
Yeah, yeah. So when you first see them and you see the moon behind the trees, that's just a weird moon prop.
Yeah.
It's just a light to me meant to look like a moon. And it crops up later in like camp scenes and stuff. So.
Yeah.
It's actually works very well.
Yeah. This movies like this.
I never thought it wasn't the real moon.
Forget about working for Roger Corman to learn how to make movies. I can watch these movies and learn how to make movies.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. Cheese starts stripping down, and I think we accidentally get some full bush pubes.
I don't think the actress meant to do that.
No. It looks like it's a mistake, and then she hikes them back up, but it's there.
And she probably said, like, can we do that again? And given that this is a Roger Corman movie, they're like, no.
They're like, nope. We got it on the first take, and we got a little extra. So, yeah.
I think even Joe Dante says on the commentary, like, most of what you see in this movie is the first take.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we got that. Everything was in focus.
Yeah.
Moving on. I've shot stuff. I mean, maybe not first take, but literally, like, inside of, you know, three takes.
If you can't get it in the first three takes...
Well,
your movie's pretty complicated.
Well, and I think what it does is it puts an urgency on everything, and people just got to bring it right out of the gates. So,
yep.
I think George Lucas talked about that in American Graffiti. A lot of that stuff is
the first
or second take. Like,
yeah.
And
well, that's some of the famous lore behind Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The first Star Wars is that as soon as George Lucas would get a take that didn't have any accidents in it, like no obvious, like, oops, like that was cut, print, move to the next setup.
We got to move to the next one because this is taking way too long.
Yeah. So keep that in mind, all you Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark fans. Most of what you're watching is the first or second take.
Yeah, yeah, totally. A great credit sequence they have.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you get the water, this shot of the water that we get used quite a bit during the film. If this water shot is the Orca breaching shot in Orca, they use this water shot a lot. This nighttime,
in the rest of the movie?
This nighttime glistening water shot. It comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Numerous times.
Well, it's a great shot.
It's a great shot. Anyway, but I and they don't use it nearly as much as they use the Orca breaching scene. So
yes, that's true. This kind of reinforces, I think we talked about how you could make a fan edit of Orca that was a lot shorter.
Yeah.
In my memory, Orca was like 2.5 hours long. I just looked, it's 92 minutes long.
Yeah. And it feels like it takes forever.
Whereas
this film feels like it takes
boom, boom, boom.
This film feels like it's like 45 minutes long to me.
Yeah. And even though there's a lot of scenes with no piranha stuff going on, I'm still interested.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. Yeah, great credits. I noticed it as a slow rack, like defocusing.
Oh, yeah. It gets like fuzzy.
It gets fuzzier and fuzzier.
The water shot, yeah.
As it goes along, which adds a depth to it. And
yeah. I like that.
And then it's all bathed in red. And I really like the piranha lettering, like dipping into the water.
Which
then
Joe Dante drew.
He drew himself.
That logo. Yeah. I had no idea until I listened to the commentary.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Do you want to talk about the cast as they come up here, or should we wait till we get into the movie when they make their appearance?
I was going to do the latter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yes, we dissolve from the water to Jaws.
Perfect. And
a pixelated Jaws.
I had this in my notes as I watched the movie, and then I listened to the Joe Dante commentary, and he says the same thing. I'm like, this movie's telling you right up front.
100% up front.
We know.
We know what we're doing.
We're ripping off Jaws.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're 100% aware. This is good filmmaking, folks.
Yeah.
We know what we are. We're saying what we are.
Yeah.
And we've gotten it out of the way. Now let's have fun. So it just puts it out there immediately, and then and you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah.
So once again, we have we're right into another economical scene. This gal is going to leave to find the kids that we just saw perish in the pool.
Yep. And she's a bit of a.
We don't have to see her at work. We don't have to see her leaving her apartment. We don't have to see her. Think about Jaws. And how long it takes Brody to go find Chrissy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So you're saying that as a...
I'm just saying. I'm not saying Jaws is bad. It works for Jaws.
Yes.
And this film is trying to be very economical in its shots and its story coverage. This is a much more economical way to do the same thing they did in Jaws, but it does it all in this one scene.
Yes.
It gives us a basis of her character. Mm-hmm. She's tenacious. She's a bit bumbly. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, two-thirds bloodhound, you know?
Yeah.
It gives us what her job is, that she's good at her job.
This movie shows me, and I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the podcast, but you know, Tyson and I, we've fan edited a few movies, and every time I'm editing, I'm always editing for economy. If you have your character walking out a door and getting into a car, there's no point to that. Like you can cut to him in the car.
Yeah.
And
unless there is a point to it.
Yes. Yeah. And more often than not, there's scenes in Jaws where it's like, there's Roy Scheider walking out of the car, walking out of his house, getting into the car. There is a point to it. We're getting to know his kids. We're getting to know his wife.
Well, and even those, I would say in Jaws, it's not just him going to the car. It's you're seeing where he lives.
Geography.
His geography. Yep. And he is in the middle of nowhere on this island that is
there's something to be said for setting up the geography.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Joe Dante, I'm going to keep mentioning the commentary. Joe Dante mentions in this commentary quite frequently, he's like, editing this movie was a nightmare for him because in many scenes he has no master. And for all you non-film people out there, a master is like the wide shot where you cover everything, all your actors, your whole set, where a lot of the reason you do that is purely to bookend your scene. You start on the master, you end on the master. Yeah. And if you need to cut, like, and you don't have a cut that works, you can cut away to the master.
Sure.
And Joe Dante mentions, like, much of this movie has no master. So, mm-hmm. like, if he needed to make an edit, he was in trouble because he had nothing to cut away to. Like, yeah. every shot, every scene has two, like, you have your, they would shoot, in this case, Heather Menzies, and then they would shoot the other guy. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't working, he didn't have anything to fall back on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see that watching the movie, how it has these problems. But back to the point of the economy of this whole movie, like, he does a brilliant job.
Yeah, it's really good.
By the way, Joe Dante edited this movie along with Mark Goldblatt, who you might know him as an editor for, you know, I don't know, True Lies, Commando, a bunch of James Cameron movies. So anyway, out of your Roger Corman school of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Mark Goldblatt.
Another great guy.
Big editor. I think both Terminator movies he did.
Yeah, so she leaves, and then we get Keenan Wynn.
His second appearance on The Real Jaws Minute.
Yeah, great character actor shows up in Orca as Novak.
Yeah. And put to much better use in this movie, I think.
Yes, yes. He's fantastic, and God, that guy has umpteen million credits to his name. Like,
oh, yeah.
This guy was a character actor for his entire career, and just awesome. I did notice this is a film that's still in theaters right now, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I haven't seen it yet, and I might see it tomorrow.
Okay. This is no spoilers, but there's a TV show that gets referenced in the film called Lancer. Mm-hmm. It's a TV Western that some of our characters interact with in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Lancer was a real show.
Okay.
And Keenan Wynn was on Lancer.
Perfect.
So I just thought that'd be a fun little thing to throw out there while Once Upon a Time's still out there. And good God, go watch that movie. It's fantastic.
I'm not avoiding it for any reason other than I'm married with children and have no life.
Yeah.
I'm all work, all kids. He's hilarious in this movie. Real quick, I want to mention, so Bradford Dillman, who's in this movie.
He literally only has two scenes, and he's the standout in both of them.
Yeah. He kills it, man. Yeah. Yeah. I do. So real quick, I found it interesting, Bradford Dillman in this movie. Both Bradford Dillman and Heather Menzies were cast in this movie. They were cast because they were the ones they thought the producers would like, audiences would recognize. Because they were both prominent in television at the time.
Oh, okay.
So putting them in this movie was there, like, we got to have characters in it that people recognize. But it's funny now, you know, 40 years on that we're watching this, they're the only two people I didn't really know. Almost everyone. So you got Keenan Wynn and even Paul Bartel. Paul Bartel.
Yeah.
And Kevin all these. Anyway, we'll get to them.
Yeah.
But it's just funny because I had to, like, other than this movie, I didn't know who Bradford Dillman was.
I don't know who either of those people were.
Yeah. They both, Bradford Dillman is in, like, just name a 60s or 70s TV procedural. You know, he's probably in, I know I'm wrong, but like if you, you know, he was in like Twilight Zone and,
gotcha.
You know, a bunch of those shows. And Heather Menzies was in a bunch of shows at the time. She was in like Dynasty or Dallas or one of those shows.
Okay.
After this.
Well, they're very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny how, they seem to be the no names to me and everybody else is not like, I was like, Keenan Wynn. Yeah.
In the credits or when he came on screen?
Oh no, when he came on screen, I was like, I knew who it was. I know my character actor's good enough.
Yeah. I know him and I couldn't even tell you right off.
Colonel Bat Guano in Doctor Strangelove.
Oh, yeah. He's in too many things that I can't keep it straight.
Oh, he is in literally too many things.
And like, isn't he in a bunch of Disney movies?
He has like 280 some odd credits to his
That guy.
I mean, that's crazy.
Worked. I always knew him from, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but he's in some Disney movie that I can't think of.
So we have the scene where we establish that our hero basically is a full-blown alcoholic.
Yep.
Yeah. Not even pretending.
They should have just cast Robert Shaw. Like, wouldn't that have been fun? He was probably, this was right around the time he passed away. He was already, yeah.
He might have already been.
Passed away right around here.
Yeah.
But that would have been funny just if Robert Shaw would have been less like.
Or not funny.
Yeah. That would have definitely detracted from Jaws if Robert Shaw had been in Piranha.
So then we get her in the Jeep that her boss didn't want to pay for, which obviously she needs. So what do you want to bet the crack in her windshield is from her opening the hood in that scene?
Oh.
Like what we're actually seeing is like the second take and like,
oh yeah,
she just like cracked it. Like, oh. Cause she really whips that thing open and it rams right into the windshield.
I didn't even notice that, but you're right. Yeah. She, ooh, yeah.
So there's no continuity error really. But I imagine they were like, oh, she cracked the windshield. If we shot anything else with her, we need to go back and shoot that again.
That's definitely how it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how it happened. Anyway. So here we're probably seeing the second take of her opening that up.
Yeah, she probably cracked it and like immediately like recoiled and they're like, oh, that take's blown. We got to shoot it again.
Yeah. So yeah, she ends up at the, I'm sorry, what's his name again? What's his character's name? I don't want to keep calling him Dillman, but.
Well, the actor's Bradford Dillman.
Yeah.
But I don't remember his character. These are the things I don't remember.
Yeah, I know. I can call him Dillman. It's fine. So I have in my notes here, Bloodhound meets Boozehound.
Oh, perfect.
Right? I also like how he just lets her come in. Yeah, come on in.
Whatever.
Come on, random stranger that I'm not even turning around for.
He's got no time for anybody.
In the middle of the woods, you know.
Yeah.
There's no paved roads to this cabin, you know.
Yeah. Something we haven't talked about is the writer of this movie.
Yes.
Do you want to get to that later? Is that it in there?
We can throw it in, yeah.
So John Sayles.
Yeah.
Known for a lot of movies.
Really like him as a director.
Yes. Do you know some of his directorial credits off the top of your head?
Lone Star, Brother from Another Planet. Mm-hmm. What else? What was the one with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio? And the guy from Good Night and Good Luck. Limbo. It's called Limbo.
Limbo. I haven't seen that one.
Limbo's a cool film.
I've only seen, I've seen Passion Fish, City of Hope, 8 Men Out.
Oh, 8 Men Out's great.
And I know he's written, he wrote Piranha, The Howling, another Joe Dante movie. He is, he wrote an early draft of E.T.
Whoa.
He also is an uncredited writer on Apollo 13. Which, by the way, is directed by Ron Howard, who came out of the, you know, he worked for Roger Corman.
I know he's done a lot of punch-up stuff.
Tons of punch. That's kind of his thing. Mainly, yeah. He's probably got 1,000 credits where he's not credited.
Mm-hmm.
And just to tie us into a future episode, he also wrote Alligator.
Cool.
So if you like Piranha, I'm just going to go out on a limb. I hate setting up a future movie for failure, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, if you like Piranha, you're going to like Alligator.
Cool.
It's very, very comparable.
So, we have economy here again with this scene, and they're talking, and in the scene he establishes that there's a dam.
Yep.
That's where the bodies would have gone to if they'd fallen in the river. That's going to be important later.
Military base.
A military base. And then once again, she's like, you're going to help me. And he goes, the hell I am. Yeah. Smash cut to he's in the Jeep with her.
Yeah.
So we've completely cut out. As the audience, we go, oh, well, she convinced him. But we don't even have to have that scene because we just make it up in our brain.
Yep.
Right?
If I made more movies, I would probably have a problem with too many smash cuts in my movie. Mm-hmm. Where you just get to it.
Yeah, yeah.
We can figure the audience, trust your audience. They know A to B.
Yeah.
They can fill in the blanks. I said this before. They don't need to see your actor walking from the door to the car.
Yeah.
They know how people get in cars. They yes. know how people drive.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Where were we at here?
We are 13 and a half minutes into this movie.
Yes.
And they are driving the Jeep up to the military thing.
The secret military base.
And I can't help but notice or, you.
Not military base, military testing facility.
Testing facility, yeah. Yes. And I couldn't help but notice there's a shot where the camera's locked off on the hood of the Jeep and you can see the camera and the reflection of the Jeep. But
oh, never no noticed that.
Yeah. I really like Bradford Dillman's wardrobe in this movie. His like mountain man plaid. And
mm-hmm.
I do appreciate too. I don't know if you noticed, but he's drinking a lot through all of this.
Yes.
And his drinking kind of diminishes as the movie goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like that.
Yeah. I have a note as they're going down these stairs and stuff. He's just a little wobbly.
Right.
But not like so much that you like uber notice it.
It's almost like, it could have been an actual mistake on the actor's part and they just kept rolling, or it's just, he's a great actor. And
oh no, he's really, he's a little bit buzzed.
Yeah.
Like that's how he's playing it. And, but he's also an alcoholic. So like he's of his faculties, even though he's fairly drunk.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, they get to the water and I really like the almost bite of his fingers, like where the camera.
Yeah, we kind of enter into a police procedural movie here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Real quick, I got to throw down. Did you know, I think they mentioned it in the podcast, that there is a 1990s remake of this movie?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that.
Okay, you don't know anything about it? Mm-mm. Well, let me tell you about it. Roger Corman produced that too. They shot it with the same exact script. It is almost a scene-for-scene remake, a la Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
Okay.
It's literally scene for scene. And it has William Catt in it. The greatest American hero.
Oh, okay.
He's the Bradford Dillman character.
Okay.
And the female lead, she's someone famous too.
And then my understanding is they reused almost all the special effects.
Most of the underwater shots are reused.
Yeah.
Yeah. But except for where you have to change out Bradford Dillman for William Catt.
Sure.
But anyway, it's just weird to me because I that was the first, when I watched the remake of Piranha once, it was on like Showtime or something. I remember getting to that exact shot and going, oh, this is exactly the Piranha I've already seen. Like, I don't know why it didn't click with me. I realized like, oh, they're remaking it. It's the same plot. But then we got to that shot and I'm like, was that the same shot? I think that was the same shot.
Yeah.
Because I knew the movie that well.
That's wild. Yeah, I've not seen it. I have seen Piranha 3D.
With Richard Dreyfuss in the opening scene.
The opening scene.
Adam Scott. Paul Scheer.
I need to go back because all these people that are in it were not famous when...
I didn't know really anybody. I think I want to rewatch it now.
Yeah, I remember loving it.
It's fun. It's definitely like, I remember watching it by myself and thinking, oh, I should have saw this with a large group of people.
And
like,
it's just trying to be another Piranha film. Like
it's a perfect reimagining. It's like,
I think it's the best way to remake something is kind of make it your own. Like, don't try to redo the original.
It was a big hit too, right?
I think it was a success, a very successful.
It was right in the middle of the 3D craze.
Yeah. I didn't see it in 3D, but because I don't like 3D films.
Nope. I not either.
Anyway, it should be noted that that director's most recent film is Crawl, which we've mentioned
on
the podcast. Neither of us have seen, so I know we keep mentioning a film that we don't know if it is good or not. But by all accounts, we've heard that it's a pretty fun film.
And it's an alligator movie,
right? Alligator movie.
Right, yeah. Okay. Well, it'll be hard to top Alligator, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, so anywho. But I noticed, the water's cold now. He puts his fingers in and goes, water's cold, ooh. And like the piranha almost bites him. And I feel like this is where we really get the piranha noise for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in that first scene, but it's really mixed low. because we're above water, but now that we're underwater, we can really hear that.
I think that sound makes an appearance in Gremlins, by the way. I'm just going to throw it out there. That's in the, like, the Gremlin mob sound effect.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. My understanding is it is dentist drills in water, and then the microphone is in the water.
I can buy that. Not even dentist drills,
but like those polishing things. Like they polish your teeth. So I think that's what their sound is. And it's like a couple of them like being dipped in and out of the water.
Yeah.
And that's how they got that sound.
I don't know what piranha sound like, but I just admire Joe Dante and the sound guy for that there's a sound.
I like the sound.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Oh.
It has a very, it has a crazed manic vibe to it.
Perfect. It's exactly, you know,
which is great for these crazed little manic fish.
And it's perfect the way John Dante just decides that the piranha will have that character trait. That's a perfect segue to mention that as we keep jumping back into the people who made this movie, I doubt he had anything to do with the sound design, but a location sound guy in this movie is Jerry Goldsmith's son. Jerry Goldsmith, the famous composer.
Oh, wow.
Who scored Gremlins, cool. Inner Space, Burbs, most of Joe Dante's movies. So it's just interesting that on this production, he had Jerry Goldsmith's son as a location sound guy.
Well, since we're on music here, what do you think about the music in this film?
It's probably my least favorite thing about the movie, honestly.
Some of it is great.
It has
really
moments.
And really works.
Yes.
Especially when we get to the camp scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Woof. Is that some bad music?
Okay, so here's where I'm coming from.
It is
from.
Like 70s, like, I don't know, like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, romantic love story.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, is this camp counselor going to hit on this little girl? Like, what is happening? Like, oh, like it just doesn't fit.
No, I think Joe Dante even mentions it in the commentary that they felt fortunate to get. He's a well-known composer who did some other like 70s classics, right? Well, I think he did Don't Look Now, the Donald Sutherland, Julie Christie movie, which is well regarded.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my problem is, first of all, I come into this knowing it's a Joe Dante movie. So instinctively my brain goes, what would a Jerry Goldsmith score sound like on this movie? And I can tell you the answer to that question. It would be amazing because where I think that this soundtrack misses a little bit on this movie is the soundtrack it's earnest and real and emotional, and it's playing it straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing it like this is like a horror movie about piranha where people and children get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like sad and tragic music. This is not a sad and tragic movie. It's a predecessor to Gremlins. It's a Jaws ripoff that also serves as a predecessor to Gremlins. And if you listen to the Gremlins score, it has like those mischievous elements to it, which wouldn't work in this movie, you know, but it has that like Gremlins has that like mischievous, like Looney Tunes quality to it.
Mm-hmm. Gremlins is like pre Danny Elfman music.
Yes, exactly. And that's almost like this movie would do better with like a kind of tongue in cheek, kind of over the top. I wondered about how it would sound with no score at all, but I think it needs a score, especially since you have all these extended scenes of no piranha. It would just feel a little too like documentary procedural. But yeah, I think this movie would do really well with like a very traditional to goofy score. So anyway, yes, I'm glad you asked that question. I had a well thought out answer.
Yeah. Well, with that.
Oh no, is it the end of episode one?
It's the end of episode one.
We're going to do more than one episode on Piranha?
Apparently we are, because we are not going fast, man. And I got a lot more to talk about. Oh,
I'm so glad, because Piranha is worth it. So we'll see you back here next week for Piranha Part 2 on The Real Jaws Minute. Check us out on Facebook. We got a Facebook group called The Real Jaws Minute. And if you want to help us offset our costs for podcasting, we have a PayPal. You can find the link for that in the podcast that you're listening to right now, or you can find it on our Facebook group. So we'll see you here next week.
Right here on The Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.